Welcome to the CodeCast Podcast. Real-world insights for your daily medical coding and billing processes. And now, here's your host, Terry Fletcher.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 24 of the CodeCast Podcast today. My name is Terry Fletcher, and I really appreciate all the listeners that have joined us each week. We are now past 5,000 downloads as of April 1st, so we're pretty excited for the second quarter and our growing audience. One of the things today is I am fighting a terrible cough, and so hopefully I'll get through the podcast. It might be a little shorter than normal, but actually today I'm inspired by my topic, and it's from a project that I've been doing, and it's an auditing project. So our topic today is really about the pitfalls of an E&M audit, really from an auditor's perspective, and that would be me. So when we get started, you'll see kind of where I'm going with it. I just kept going through this project and doing this audit and thinking, I've got to talk about this. But before we get started, let's thank our sponsoring partners, AdvancedMD, spotlighting telemedicine as a solution that's proven to boost patient engagement and bring in new revenue streams for your practice, advancedmd.com. And the FIA Group, an experienced provider of healthcare cost containment techniques, offering services designed to control healthcare costs and protect plan assets. FIAGroup.com. Okay, so let's just kind of get started here with what I'm thinking. And, you know, for those of you who don't know that, you might know me and understand what I do for a living. But one of the things I do, aside from coding and billing, education and speaking, is that I audit practices on E&M and procedural services. So, you know, not just for Medicare, and now commercial plans have been contacting me quite a bit over the last couple of years to audit for them as well on the physician side. But I also do this to help, you know, do it privately for physician practices to help their practice with documentation concerns and hopefully to avoid documentation issues that can lead to negative payer audits. So this week, and it's hard to believe I've done this, but this week I've already audited over 1,000 records. One thing when you're sick and you can't speak, and that's what you do for a living, you basically say, okay, time to really kick your butt in gear and get those audits done. But in doing that, I wanted to have a discussion on what's really important and when it comes to why you could pass or fail an audit and what I'm seeing as a professional auditor to assist you to move forward in your administrative decisions. So before I assist practices, the first thing I always request is a few different medical records for new and established patients and consults as well. And then when I audit them, I use those as educational tools for both negatives and positives. So I want to see, you know, what they're doing right as well as what they're doing wrong. But I want to basically be able to understand exactly what the provider is thinking as I'm looking through the records. And so, for example, you may see an increased risk, especially with an EMR and the ability to click through organ systems that maybe or weren't actually reviewed, for example, marking a negative on an exam system that is an affected area or reason for the visit or chief complaint. So an example, patient presents with back pain, but the exam of the musculoskeletal system states negative or normal. And this would be a red flag for me as an auditor, especially when the ancillary staff usually takes a lot of the review of systems, which is the worksheet that says, have you ever had, the patient fills out in the waiting room. And then it's gone over by secondary staff, or I call them ancillary staff. And then the doctor walks in after that. And so you see positives on that review of system. And then you go to the actual exam portion and it says it didn't exist. So this is where there's inconsistencies. And then when I see that, as far as a red flag to me as an auditor, I then now look for other inconsistencies because the trust that the documentation is accurate is now gone. And that's one of the biggest things that I see. And I also see different typeset within the EMR, the electronic medical record, meaning that the standard or the generic electronic medical record font, and then the actual free type of the physician. And then what that looks like or can be considered to me is that that's all that was actually done is what the doctor actually free types. Now, I've found that in some systems, the free type is just set at a different font, but it's supposed to be consistent. So if you're noticing that in your medical record, just know that could be a flag from an auditor who's saying, okay, now I got to fine tooth comb this and basically look through it you know, with a magnifying glass and say, was this actually done or not done? And so I just want to caution you that these are the things I'm seeing this week. And so I really wanted to just bring it up. Now, errors can occur on both sides, so physician documentation and in the coding. However, CPT and ICD-10 coding does become less risky when documentation is being done properly, of course. And unfortunately, even with CDI departments, and I always want to give you the acronym because I'm seeing a lot of these nowadays and everybody's like, what are you talking about? CDI is Clinical Documentation Improvement. So those are the departments that have been created. It's almost like a compliance department within a practice. But with CDI departments correcting documentation behaviors, or at least attempting to with education, it's an ongoing process since doctors get busy about treating the patient and with their ever-increasing volumes of patients that they're seeing. And then I notice that they start to forget some of the good behavior over time. So in practices that I go to, whether I audit off-site and then go after, or I actually go on-site to audit and then educate, I notice improvement within the first 3 to 6 months. And then the decline in accurate documentation happens, and many records just feel like they were either rushed to get through, or the doctors kind of lost their mind in what they were told and what they were trained to do. And this is why whenever I do an audit, you're always going to see my contract have a follow-up visit on it. It's just necessary. That helps me, you know that the due diligence is there. Say that I want to see how you did. It's one thing to have somebody come in and audit your records or take a look or educate, but then how do you know that they did what you instructed them to do? Especially if you find problems and now you're saying, okay, well, I'm seeing this, and if you don't change this behavior, you're going to have issues in the future. And so, you know, any auditor, you know, worth his or her salt is going to make sure that there's something there in follow up, just to make sure it's there, and that gives you credibility as well. In medical practices, though, it's also important to have coders, billers, and knowledgeable clinical staff to help with kind of closing the gap between these errors. The topic comes up a lot for me on why physicians and office managers often don't want to hire or spend the extra money to hire a certified coder in-house. I know that can be hard to understand sometimes, especially in larger practices where compliance can sometimes be at issue. And yes, it can be costly, but how much cost would you incur if you were audited and have to pay back not just the money paid, but fees that were added on for the error? Not only that, once you're formally audited, remember, once you're formally audited by a payer, you now have a target on your back. They're going to continue to watch your coding and billing habits for quite a while. Even though they say they don't, they do. I've seen it. And I'm not saying certified coders are perfect. I definitely am an advocate for the profession, because with a certified coder or biller, you can be a certified biller as well, they have more drive to protect your practice because they're also protecting the reputation. So that's just something to think about. It's not just about your practice, but that individual has, first of all, they studied and took this 5.5 hour or longer test, and to make sure that they were capable of coding and billing and understanding the rules. And then also there's things that open up for those certified personnel, so that make sure that they know they can help protect you. But just something to think about. I've seen very, very good coders and billers who weren't certified as well that have your best interests at heart. But just taking that a step further, I just want to make sure you're aware of that if you're thinking about bringing somebody on like that. And then all it really takes is 20 to 30 encounters found to have been coded just one higher level of service than it should have been, or than what the documentation supported. And, you know, I've known several physicians, and they usually come to me after they get in trouble, which is sad to me, really, that this has happened to. The insurance company requests back, you know, approximately $46,000 or $45,000, somewhere around there, and money's paid. But guess what? They actually then basically say, well, that's the amount you're paying back to the payer for overcoding, but there's fees, interest, and penalties involved, and your actual payback is a little over $1 million. So you've got to look at the big picture. I do get some smaller practices that say, that's okay, I won't get audited. Please do not assume that you are untouchable for an audit. If you're a primary care physician, if you're a specialist, or if you traditionally, based on your practice, report level 4s and 5s services, it's not a matter of if they will practice or if they will audit you, it's when they will audit you. So, you know, it's just something that you have to really think about in those kind of that aspect. And don't think low coding keeps you safe either. That can be as much of a red flag for coding as level fours and fives. Because remember, what triggers an audit for a payer is when you have an outlying physician. And so based on your geographic location and your specialty, that's what they're looking for. So for an example, if you're a general surgeon and you report many level three new and established patient visits, which I've seen before, but your subspecialty is colorectal surgery, just that specialty in itself and the high-risk population that comes with it would warrant a payer audit if you're only coding low complexity medical decision-making codes. And so because it's not consistent with your peers' coding, and you could then trigger an audit because it also is not consistent with patient medical necessity. So correct coding is what you need without regard to level of service, but with documentation that matches or supports that your level of service that you're reporting. And that's what can accelerate your revenue cycle reimbursement, reduce the number of rejected claims, and increase or maximize your revenue. One thing I try not to do is assume that the provider isn't doing what they, you know, think they're doing, what he or she thinks they're doing for a level four or five, but it's very possible that they're forgetting to document one, you know, maybe some very important facts that they're actually providing that could make the medical record support that higher level of service. So this is one of the best parts of my job. I actually get kind of a thrill from it when I'm having a conversation with physicians and staff. And there's such positive takeaways, especially when I can see that light bulb going on. And there's always positives. First of all, you help pull out that missed opportunity and show them what would have been a more complete record when they're really doing the work themselves. So I've had, you know, there are several audit points I brought up to physicians where they've had no idea that certain things that they're already doing, all they had to do was document when they performed it and would help their point value in supporting what they did. So one example would be not only ordering a test or diagnostic, but also reading the actual film, not just a report, would possibly get you an extra point in medical decision-making. Same thing with reviewing outside records or talking to another decision-maker that's not the patient while the patient is face-to-face with you. Just in those things I just mentioned, you could get 3 points for that instead of just one for ordering a lab or a test. And that could possibly, you know, boost your medical decision from low to moderate. And now you have the documentation to support it. Now, and that being said, I always stress we do not just add things to, you know, add a point value to get a higher level visit. That's not what we're doing here. Because to me, that's just like padding a record to move the chains to a higher level. I absolutely hate that. But if you're internally educating your physicians, you first need to listen to them, ask them, run me down a typical patient encounter for you. Let me know everything, every single thing you're talking about from the time that you step in the room to the time that you're leaving. And then how do you basically say, this is what we're going to do. And when you talk about that and discuss it and examine it and, you know, you review it and then what's decided and then what's scheduled, this is what you're telling your physician. You're saying everything, you know, from the time that you're basically getting their chief complaint to asking them their review of systems or reviewing the sheet. Then you're examining the patient based on their chief complaint. You're reviewing anything that they've given you. Maybe there was some also medical records from this visit or prior to, or something that you have to still obtain, which actually now is an extra charge. Maybe you're making that decision of what will help this patient recover or what we need to do maybe in more advanced diagnostics, and then what you need to schedule. And then you ask the physician the question, did you document that in the record? You know, one record it's been driving me crazy as I'm sitting here doing these audits this week is I know this one practice I'm doing. I've been auditing for them for a little over 12 years. They always come back, which I appreciate. But I'm noticing they put on some extra physicians. So whenever they add physicians, they say, you know, we need to take a look. And so I noticed that one of the physicians within the specialty is not documenting some things that I could almost bet she is actually providing. So had a face-to-face phone call with the physician and said, I noticed that you have these patients that are coming in with this chief complaint and the workup looks like you're actually providing this service, but I'm not seeing you document it in the record. Can I just clarify that you aren't documented? And the physician said, I'm absolutely discussing that, but I didn't know I needed to add that in my documentation or that it would even make a difference. And I was thinking, oh my goodness. So those are things that, you know, you not only need to have somebody if you have an auditor internally or externally, but somebody that knows your specialty. So that's important as well, because then they know to ask those kinds of questions, and that can help, you know, really reflect to the physician that you're out there trying to help them. I always want to know, for example, about smoking cessation. There are so many, unfortunately, current smokers out there that are patients that have other conditions. And so that can directly or indirectly affect the outcome of a procedure, or at the very least, the recovery of a procedure. And so when you know about that information, that can be really helpful because, and let me just explain this in just a second, but it really just gives, you know, the doctor looks at it as a casual conversation. You know, the patient's a smoker, but you're looking at it as a clinical find. And that's the kind of the mindset you have to put your physician in when you find some of these things that, you know, come up on the newsreels with healthcare and what Medicare will allow, let you talk about or, you know, discuss with the patient as far as a modification of behavior. And, you know, is there a charge tied to it? Is there an out-of-pocket or share cost for the patient? And that's why when I go back to that certified coder, or that certified personnel that can help you, they tend to get a lot of alerts in this topic and really be able to say, oh, look what you could possibly capture now. But it's really having the conversations. So before I move forward with what we're talking about here, just with the smoking cessation, I just want to mention our Better Living sponsor since 2002. Better Living has been the premier digital lifestyle brand dedicated to travel, food, health, home, and more. BetterLiving.com. Kind of went along with the smoking cessation there. But when the physician has discussions with patients on the benefits, let's say, of quitting smoking and offers treatment in the form of maybe a prescription or a therapy, and then there's at least 3 minutes of time discussion in the record, and that is not only helpful for the HPI, because now you're saying the history of present illness, there's an effect there. It also can be part of the medical decision making, but there's also an extra charge to the payer, without a share of cost to the patient. So Medicare has waived the copay and deductible for smoking cessation. But a lot of times I'll get physicians that say, I didn't even know a 3-minute discussion on the benefits of, you know, the need of quitting smoking did anything to add value to my record. So it's continually letting the physicians know that things evolve in the medical documentation world. Certain things that we talk about that are just seem to be a given with patients, you know, definitely are an issue. I was just doing a dermatology audit as well in these records, and I was talking to the physician before we took on her records, and I just happened to mention the smoking cessation and a couple of things with patients on the alcohol cessation as well, discussion, behavioral management. And she says, well, I'm derm, that's going to affect me like crazy. And so we kind of started talking about cirrhosis and what you see in the skin and, you know, how smoking can affect the skin as well, especially for patients that you're dealing with any kind of skin cancer issues and how that can, you know, accelerate the process. And so you can see right there, you're thinking, oh my gosh, of course that's going to make an issue. So those are things that, you know, as we evolved in the documentation, the medical record really needs to reflect everything that your physician's discussing with the patients. And then the medical decision-making of a record will and should prove out in the end that it will be justified having been reviewed, examined, or treated, what the patient needs and then what you're billing. And always remember that the overarching criteria in code selection is that medical decision. And Medicare takes that position as well. So for those of you listening thinking, is it time to internally audit ourselves? Or if you're thinking about it, the answer is usually yes. So once you do that, and if you find a pattern of documentation behavior that does not sit well with you, that is when you decide, okay, is it time to call an external expert for the expanded audit and education? Will this just give me peace of mind that maybe we're doing things right? Or you could be concerned, you know, that you could be headed for a payer audit. Or maybe you're thinking after listening to this, maybe there's some revenue opportunities that you cannot find on your own or you didn't know about, and you might want to consider an external audit. So again, we're trying not to, you know, encourage you. This is not a commercial message to generate business for us, although, you know, we're here to assist you if you need us. So really just let me know. I've been auditing so much in the past year, and it's heating up in 2018. I just really wanted to share my thoughts with you because part of my passion is to protect the physician on the front end. Okay. And I want you to have those tools to do that as well. There's nothing more important than to take the business of medicine to the next level in the coding and reimbursement process. You want to maintain a healthy practice, not only so you continue to have a job, but also that you've got healthy patients and you've got patients that want to continue to come back and you've got happy physicians. And in saying that, I think next week I really want to focus on some mid-level providers. I know I did something last year when we first started our podcast in November on our nurse practitioners and PAs, but I think it's time to start again because I've seen a couple of articles out there and some things just talking about mid-level providers, and there's been some areas and some hospitals that have actually been, I hate to use the word firing, but terminating contracts, let's be politically correct, of physicians who are not allowing mid-level providers to act as physicians. And we need to have a discussion about that. They're called mid-level providers for a reason. They are definitely a physician extender, and they're necessary in many practices, but they're not a physician. And so we want to make sure that we're understanding what's happening in that space. And there's a lot of things going on right now that's really important to not only know how to utilize a mid-level, but to make sure that a mid-level understands their role in your practice as an extender. And then I am going to revisit the telemedicine and telehealth model. I talked about that. I think our third episode was telemedicine. I'm still getting downloads from that. But in 2018, we had so many updates, so many issues that really came to play. And Medicare is going to look at from spending, you know, $20 million in 2016 on telehealth services to, it looks like, close to almost 300 to 400 million. And that's just a crazy number. So I do want to bring you some options as we head into 2018. So you'll know that what's coming up in the next couple of weeks, it's going to be some exciting stuff, some things that I think can really help you out and hopefully really lend to your practice having that success. So we want to also thank our final sponsor today's episode, and it's new to us, Prestige Billing, Medical Billing Services and Revenue Cycle Management Company, exclusively for plastic and reconstructive surgeons. They're out of South Carolina. PrestigeAccounts.com. Thank you, everyone, for listening in today. We're very excited again about our 5,000 downloads. I think I looked this morning. We're actually over 5,300 now. And so please share with anyone you know that could benefit from listening in. And we, again, appreciate and continue your continued support on our CodeCast podcast. Thanks again for listening today, and everybody make it a great day and a great week.
For more information on medical coding, billing, auditing, and compliance, including how to hire Terry, follow Terry on Twitter at TerryCoder1 or visit her website at www.terryfletcher.net. Podcast producer Joe Kuzma, music producer DeSassin Music.